Hi, my name's Sam Harrison. I'm currently an MSc GIS student at the University of Edinburgh. I'm going to present the results from the qualitative and quantitative assessment of DEMs generated when using three different interpolation routines to process Muller data. The research originally took the form of my undergraduate dissertation at Kingston University under the supervision of Mike Smith and Nick Petford, and it attempts to address several areas considered important to contemporary planetary science. So need a little bit of context. Given the obvious lack of field study for planetary surfaces, topographic data plays a particularly important part. The earliest topographical maps were created from photogrammetry from relatively poor resolution, poorly geolocated imagery from the Viking missions. So they weren't particularly good at accuracy. However, technological advancements and improvements in both spatial and spectral resolution mean that much more reliable mapping can now be conducted. This is especially true of active sensors such as radar and LIDAR, which have revolutionised the field, allowing vastly more accurate altimetry profiles to be collected. The advantage of them is also that they can penetrate clouds, so concealed surfaces aren't a problem. A case example of a LIDAR sensor is Mars Orbiter Laser Altimeter, which was a primary sensor aboard NASA's Mars Global Surveyor, which began its scientific method in 1998. The sensor operated by firing infrared pulses at the Martian surface, roughly 8 nanoseconds apart, and measuring the reflectance return times. The varying surface height produced a range of return times, which can then be transformed into elevation values. I put a couple of images in to demonstrate the development of the topographic data. This is the DEM derived from the Viking imagery, which was pretty damn good for what they were working with. But compared to this topographic map, which was derived from the Muller data, I mean, the difference speaks for itself. Plus, it's pretty. As digital data collection methods have improved, so too has the need for suitable spatial analysis increased, especially in the case of processing, and especially for the case of altimetry and topographic data, for which Muller is an ideal case study. Every sensor has an individual ground resolution or footprint, which is essentially the extent of the surface that it can acquire data for at any given time. This is determined by various factors, including orbital altitude, pulse length, and antenna beam width. In Muller's case, the footprint is essentially a point measurement. The orbital movement of the sensor creates paths of the points measurements between which the overlap is incomplete. Therefore, spaces without data acquisition occur, and creating a regular data set. A malfunction also ceased Muller's active function in 2001, so there was no opportunity for repeated coverage to try and close the gaps. Therefore, for a full array of elevation values, for example, to generate a digital elevation model, interpolation must be applied. To quickly define, interpolation is the process of estimating values for which there are none by applying algorithms which use the values acquired for the surrounding areas. This sample pick shows a very simplified concept of interpolation. Gappy created by the collected by the sensor through interpolation gives a non-gappy grid. The research adaptive takes into account that spatial analysis must be tailored to specific input data, and there is a role for geographical information systems at this step and beyond. The basic principles of GIS can be very easily extended to any type of spatial data at any scale, and including interplanetary. Thus, while the research primary purpose was to assess the quality of different interpolation routines for processing Muller data, a key aspect of this was implementation in a commercial off-the-shelf GIS software, which is not commonly used for interplanetary data. Sorry. Muller data has the distinct advantage of being available online publicly at PDS Geosciences node in 5 formats, 2 of which are pertinent to this research. The raw altimetry profiles, precision experiment data records, were used in this case. These are collected and archived chronologically, and they supersede the aggregated experiment data records, which were the original form, because they have corrected orbit precision. In addition, mission experiment gridded data records were used, which are global DIMs compiled from the complete set of altimetry profiles. They're used here in a comparative purpose because they're the first global high-accuracy DEMs for any planetary body and are considered a definitive data set and are therefore the basis for most research, but there is always room for improvement, I say. For working with raw molar data, the generic mapping tool software has been a common choice. This is a command line open source software and was actually the software which was used to create the MEGDAs through interpolation. GMT was also used both partially and exclusively in some previous studies. The ArcMap software, which is part of Esri's ArcGIS package, was used as an atypical choice for interplanetary and Martian data in particular, thereby offering a fresh perspective. ArcMap fully supports non-terrestrial data, unlike some others, and its usage here assesses whether commercial GIS packages can be an equivalent to or a better choice than GMT or similar for interplanetary processing. The sites used were primarily selected to highlight the point measurement nature of molar data and that shot spacing variance occurs over latitude. Due to molar's near-polar orbit, perpendicular to Mars rotation, greatest repeat coverage occurs at the polar regions because on every orbit it passes over these regions but passes over the equator much less. You can see on these examples here that the difference is quite marked between the high and low latitude shot spacing. I mean, some of these gaps would be far upwards of like tens of kilometres. A secondary consideration for the site selection was topography, which would lend itself to the visual analysis of DEMs and make life a bit easier for me. The Lomonosov crater is roughly 151 kilometres across, and it was chosen here because it is situated in the Vastus Borealis at just over 65 degrees north, therefore placing it in a high-latitude region where shot spacing is closer. In addition, craters have a relatively standard morphology, so it would provide clear basis for analysis. Gusev crater, roughly 145 kilometres across, was the site of landing for NASA's exploration rover Spirit in 2004. It's situated at low near equatorial latitude in direct contrast to the high latitude of Lomonosov, therefore allowing comparison of the effect of shot spacing. It was hypothesised that the greater shot spacing at the low latitude would produce a poorer quality of DEM. To sum up the method, three different interpolation routines were applied to molar PEDA data to generate DEMs. Qualitative and quantitative analysis was then performed using the MEGDAs as a form of control. This was done using the geostatistical analysis extension in ArcMap. Once each DEM had been generated, the qualitative and quantitative analysis was performed, and methods for this included the basics such as visual comparison, but also the more complex such as raster math. Some preliminary steps were needed to prepare the data before interpolation could be applied. A key but somewhat obvious point is that the more PEDA files used, the greater the density of shots and therefore the more accurate DEM. As this is the case, 600 PEDA files were used out of a possible around 750. The complete set could not be used due to bandwidth and memory issues because my ISP nearly had a fit over my downloads because each PEDA is like 30-odd megabytes. So. The PEDA files were then run through a tailored software called PEDA-to-Tab, which extracted the data shots between the user-specified area, i.e. for two sections which covered Lomonosov and Gusev crater. The text files generated were then converted to a format recognised by ArcMap and imported into the program as XY data. Having done this, the latitude and longitude were reprojected to an equidistant cylindrical projection with a central meridian of 180 degrees and a standard parallel of 0 degrees. This was done to maintain consistency with the MEGDA projection. Once the PEDAs were sorted out, the required areas were clipped from the MEGDA raster tiles to exactly the same extent as the PEDA areas. So finally, to the interpolation itself. The following interpolation routines were applied. Inverse distance weighted, which is a deterministic routine which estimates unknown point values by averaging the values of the sample points in the surrounding areas. The closer a point is to the centre of the null value, the more weight it has in the averaging process. Number two is regularised splining, which is also a deterministic routine. And this applies a mathematical function to minimise overall surface curvature, creating a surface which passes smoothly through all sample points. And thirdly, kriging, which is a statistical routine which sets it apart from the other two. And this relies on the assumption that the distance and direction between the sample points reflects a spatial correlation, and then it fits a mathematical function to the sample points to estimate the unknown value. Several previous studies to investigate interpolation with Moller data have occurred. Inverse distance weighted was found to perform inefficiently by the first two on the list, and it is used here as an example of an already known poor performer. Regular spining is commonly used for elevation surfaces, although Abramov and McEwen actually found that it did not perform particularly well with Moller data. Kriging is untested on Moller data and therefore is a completely unknown entity. Once the interpolation had been done and the DEMs were generated, the qualitative analysis was achieved by generating shaded relief maps for visual comparison. Hill shades were chosen to be used here because they provide a clearer means of analysis than the gridded DEMs themselves, because they essentially produce what can be roughly considered an image. For each site, they were visually assessed not only relative to each other, but also to the MEGDA control. This shows the comparative hill shades for the Lomonosov crater. As you can see, IDW performs really quite poorly. There's some really bad stepping effects at the edge of the crater in particular. The splining is a bit better, but still subject to some of the stepping effects, and also this huge linear artifact runs right through it, which it does to some lesser extent on the others, but it's particularly prominent on the splining. Kriging has produced the best result, very little stepping effect, and it's a lot more smooth, but if you look at it in contrast with the MEGDA directly, you can see that some apparent homogenization of finer detail seems to have occurred, which is a bit unfortunate. For Gusev, IDW has again performed really quite poorly, really bad stepping up here and down here. And spining, again, huge linear artifacts, although, again, these run through the other two, but to a lesser extent. The best result, again, kriging, but the smoothing effect that I mentioned for Lomonosov is actually more pronounced here. You can see down here some finer detail has just got blurred. It's interesting to note that all six for each crater are affected by the linear artifacts through the same thing. This was taken to suggest that they could be the result of greater shot spacing. However, assessment of the point spacing over the DEMs suggests that conversely, the linear artifacts may actually be a result of over-density of points due to multiple overlapping tracks, which is a bit strange. The quantitative analysis first used elevation statistics. For both Lomonosov and Gusev crater, for the stats for kriging in inverse distance weighted are most similar to that of the... to that of the MEGDA. For splining, the results are really, really skewed. I mean, totally different. While the minimum and maximum elevation values are actually like really different, though, the mean value isn't, which was taken to be a product of the linear artifact, although this doesn't explain why it hasn't had the same effect on the stats for the other two, because it was in them as well, just not as bad. But additionally, spatial analysis raster math function was used to perform statistical analysis, wherein the interpolated DEMs were subtracted from the MEGDA in order to establish the degree of variance between the two. Exact correlation would produce a calculated value of zero for each cell, so therefore the higher difference in value, the greater the disparity between the two. Yeah, I'm missing a line, sorry. I've lost my plot now. Kriging overall shows the closest statistical match, and the spining is again completely skewed, which correlates with the anomalous elevation values. Generally, the statistics for inverse distance weighted fall between that of kriging and regularized splining, which is counterintuitive to the fact that it performed worst visually. The stats can be put into better context by actually looking at the raster math statistical maps which produce. For example here I used the kriging maps. It's the areas of high topography in which the great... Oh, God, not again. in which the greatest difference in values occurs. This is unsurprising because these are the areas in which all three interpolation routines performed worse. It's because these areas are the ones which show the greatest difference in elevation, which may not be reflected by the interpolation process or necessarily assign the same value by each. So that's what I say. That's for Lomonosov and that's for Q7 again, around the edges. Furthermore, evaluation of the statistics using the histograms is useful. These are for kriging and splining, show the contrast between the best and the worst. For both craters, the kriging values are slightly more distributed across the range, whereas for splining, they're more concentrated, and obviously it's higher. It should be noted here, the nature of the raster math analysis is inherently subjective. It's unlikely to produce an exact match because the MEGDAs themselves are a result of interpolation and therefore not a control in the strict scientific sense. The method is useful only for ascertaining how close the comparative values fall. A sufficient correlation would validate the accuracy of both DEMs involved. To summarise the findings, visual analysis reveals that for both craters, kriging has produced a DEM which compares favourably to the MEGDA. Inverse distance weighted, in contrast, does not seem to handle MOLA data very well at all. And splining does a DEM of passable visual quality if you ignore the huge linear artifact running right through it. Statistical evaluation also supports kriging as best. Inverse distance weighted performs okay in statistical sense, but not in the actual representation. Whereas conversely, splining performs okay visually, but the statistics are all over the place. For Gusev, the overall poorer quality of the DEM supports the hypothesis that shot space invariance has had a significant effect on the quality of the DEMs. In conclusion, it has been found that reasonable resolution DEMs can be generated by applying interpolation routines commonly used in GIS to raw MOLA data, though these DEMs do show varying degrees of visual and statistical artifacts from the interpolation processes. Of the three routines applied, kriging performs at a level well above that of inverse distance weighted and splining. These findings suggest that statistical interpolation might be a better choice than deterministic for the processing of MOLA data, but extended research is needed to confirm or disprove this. Both Lomonosov and Gusev Krater were excellent subjects for DEM analysis. The hypothesis that shot spacing at low latitude has a detrimental effect on the DEMs is upheld, as the high latitude DEMs were generally of a greater clarity than the low latitude ones. The limitations of interpolation must be properly appreciated. The process of creating values where there are none is never going to produce a perfect result. You can try and get as close as possible, but that's about the best you can do. On a similar note, although the use of MEGDAs was useful, even these so-called definitive DEMs are derived from estimated values themselves, and improvement is always an option. The current movement of GIS into the domain of planetary science requires development of appropriate techniques and software. ArcMap has here been proved a practical choice of software for evaluating Martian datasets, with particular benefit gained from the analysis extensions that are part of the package. Overall, this research can perhaps be considered the starting point for further research into optimising the processing of interplanetary data. And I just have my references, and that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sam. Yes?
Point of information. Kriging has, in fact, been applied to MOLA and published in JGR by a paper led by John Bridges several years ago, looking at the Beagle 2 landing site. The linear artifacts that you refer to are very well-known problems with offsets in the actual MOLA height values that are employed. But my question is, what interpolation technique was used for the gridded MEGDRs that you used as true?
But I found that information actually incredibly hard to find. I was like, I couldn't work it out. I think I found something that said it was tension splining, but I was never entirely sure, I have to confess.
Any other questions? David?
Given that the metadata exists and look to be even better than what you're able to do by Krieging, is there a circumstance you can imagine when somebody would want to use Martian data and want to Krieg it and generate their own DEM rather than using the metadata?
I knew someone was going to ask something like that. I don't know. I really just wanted to investigate how you could possibly optimise Muller data.
When you've got something like Mars, when you've got oodles of data, I mean, you can see perhaps where Dave's question is coming from, but what if you're applying it to other planetary bodies where you haven't got so much data? So I'm thinking, say, for instance, of Eros, the asteroid that, you know, Mir went around for a year. Could you apply a similar sort of process to that data to get a different idea of the DEMs for...
I presume so, yes. Yeah. So in the context of that, I think.
Right, OK.
Sorry.
Any other questions for Sam? OK, thanks very much.
Thank you.